Welcome back to the couch, everybody. Welcome into another NBA episode. We have so much to discuss today. We are one day removed from the NBA season ending. The Thunder are your 2025 NBA champions. Crazy game seven, obviously headlined by the unfortunate Haliburton injury. We'll get into that. We'll get into the game. And we are also going to react to the Rockets trading for Kevin Durant. Max, we have a lot to catch up on. How you doing?
Yeah, I mean, pretty classic couch podcast fashion here. We take like a month, 2 month break, and miss the entire finals and record on the last day of the season. So, honestly, my bad on that one. I moved again. If you can tell, if you're watching on YouTube, I moved to another place. I moved in with my girlfriend. So, new office. It's gonna be a set space for a while here. All things going well, hopefully. But yeah. Excited to be back on the pod here and kind of back from scratch. We have a lot to get into, so let's start with the beginning. We're going to talk about the game itself. I think that's something that we should just kind of start with, and then we can kind of break down how it goes for each team, and kind of go from there. But within the game itself, Jordan, let's kind of start here. Did you think before Tyrese Haliburton went down? What were you thinking? Who did you think was going to win? And what were you
I thought
thinking?
The Pacers were going to win. Like I seriously thought they were going to. Because like in Game Six, the Thunder's offense was so out of sorts, and the Pacers made some really nice changes on defense. And then to start Game Seven, the Thunder's offense is out of sorts, and it's like ugly, and they're really struggling to score. And the Pacers are doing Pacers things on offense. Hallie hits three threes, and I was like, oh my god, are they actually going to do this? Like, did we all just get the analysis of this series completely wrong? Were we so far off on this? And Indiana is actually just the better team. And I really thought they were going to do it. And then, you know, the injury happens and it just completely like derails what should have been an all time NBA game.
Yeah, so Hallie tears his ACL, or excuse me, his Achilles at 4:50 in the first. And leading into that, right, OKC comes out, they got the double big lineup, and right away there's just something off. I think you alluded to it. There just was this feeling watching them that they almost looked like they were kind of scared and like not ready to go. No one was hitting shots, which kind of continued throughout the game, honestly, for OKC. But I mean, the first four actions, they're initiated by Nembhard, and you can tell Hallie's kind of out in the corner there. He's kind of being that like decoy offensive player. And they're getting to the bucket. They're scoring at will here. The Pacers are. And I noticed, like, they talked about it on the broadcast a little bit. They start off, they're playing half court, not full court press. And it just felt like they were able to get set, and OKC wasn't able to get them on their heels, the Pacers on the heels defensively, and just kind of get past them. And I agree, like, the offense was just kind of clunky and out of rhythm. J-Dub was pretty bad up until about the second or third quarter here. He just kind of, like, wasn't making a difference in a positive way offensively. And I thought the double big lineup was just getting exposed. I mean, Siakam was so versatile in those, you know, first couple minutes there, where he's able to kind of attack those mismatches with Hartenstein. And it was just it was looking good for the Pacers. And I like you, was convinced it was going to happen and they were going to, you know, go ahead. Because, I mean, Haliburton hits three straight threes, right? He's screaming at the crowd. Everything's going well. And then it just falls apart, right? And I think firsthand, I think I've never seen a more devastating injury, right? In terms of like with the stakes and everything involved.
Yeah.
Have you?
No, I totally agree. Like the look on his face, and people, it's always weird with Achilles injuries because like Dame didn't react to it. Like KD didn't look like he was in that much pain. And sometimes I wonder if like with Tatum and with Haliburton, it's more about knowing what just happened rather than the actual pain.
Yeah.
And I think with Hallie, like you could see like he knew that not only did he just tear his Achilles, but like now he wasn't going to be able to play in the game seven, like in the biggest game of his life, and have a chance to go win an NBA championship. And it's just like heartbreaking, everything about it. It's horrible. The scenes of him in the, you know, hallway after, you know, seeing his teammates on the crutches, like it is so tough to stomach.
Yeah, and you couldn't tell how bad the injury was the first like 30 times they replayed it.
Oh
I
my
felt like
God, dude.
The back 30 was really where I started to tell how bad it was. I mean, the coverage of this finals was just horrific. Like, I thought it ruined the product, in my opinion. And I don't know if you agree with that, but the way that ESPN covered this was disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch the halftime or the pregame, so I think that's the part that most people have the biggest problem with. You know, Breen RJ and Doris, I think, are fine. I certainly don't think they are like, the magic trio that you want for
No.
an NBA finals, but I thought they were just fine. And then, yeah, like the weird replays, and I don't know. It's all, I don't know. What can you do?
Yeah, it was very tough there. But I mean, it felt like this injury sort of stunned the Thunder more than it did the Pacers almost, like, because the Pacers keep on rolling, right? They come out after the timeout, and they just kind of keep it going. They put McConnell in, and immediately, like, in my notes, I just have it all caps. This is too much McConnell,
Yeah.
because he comes out, he has like two straight turnovers, and he's a little sloppy and just kind of a little bit like out of control. And I was a little worried, but they kind of kept their head up. And I mean, they make it 48-47 at half, right? They kind of do that weird Tony Bradley lineup to start the second, the Pacers do. And it's like Siakam, Ben Shepherd, Ben Math, McConnell, and Tony Bradley. It's just kind of a strange lineup, which I was excited to kind of see how that worked. Like Tony Bradley being, I know I've mentioned it a million times, being on a 10-day contract and then
Yeah, it's
playing
crazy.
meaningful minutes in the finals is ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, with Haliburton gone, right? Just basketball wise, in terms of the game itself, you lose your guy that just is the connector piece. He's the start that gets everything going. You see Pascal Siakam's sort of his offensive output start to go down when he has to become the number one option here. Really, it was like the only one that kind of stepped up outside of McConnell was really Ben Mathis in terms of like a facilitating taking the shot
Yeah, but
role. I thought
even
Turner.
Mathurin, like, I thought was not great until
No.
that final stretch where the game was pretty much decided, and he did a great job getting it from like 22 down to 10 or whatever. But I mean, by that point, it was kind of wraps. Yeah, McConnell in the third was just out of his mind again, and it's so crazy, seeing a guy that went undrafted. And he's what, 31 years old and just completely under the radar, like change multiple finals games with such an unorthodox game, like relying on 8 foot fadeaway jumpers and
Yeah, 8 foot
isolation plays.
full form jumpers with a hitch and a shot. It's
Yeah.
ridiculous. Like it's such a strange thing to watch on the TV. But yeah, and I think like OKC, it almost seemed like they were kind of shaken. Like, and you got to think, right? They've game planned to have to go up against Tyrese Haliburton, and to pull that from your game plan, like you have to kind of adjust on the fly there. And I mean, they're not hitting shots. Like SGA was awesome. He
Yeah.
plays so well. He was not hitting shots. He was
No,
scoring a lot
nobody
from
could
the
make a
free throws.
shot. Yeah.
Yeah, Lu Dort. Like, I mean, Lu Dort at the that was probably the first time I've watched Lu Dort and been like, I actually don't think this is going in right now.
Yeah, they shot 40% for the game from the field. But again, like it is a credit to their defense and what got them there. That, it's fitting that they win in kind of an ugly, low-scoring battle where they force what 21 turnovers, have 14 steals. Caruso was a menace. J-Dub had an awesome steal on a handoff. They as good as McConnell was, they turned him over 7 times, which kind of shows you like what happens when McConnell gets thrust into the hey, we need you to do everything role. I thought Cason Wallace was, McConnell got the best of him a couple times, but Cason came up with some huge steals. He had the denial in the backcourt. He stole it from Obi off a rebound. He and Hartenstein, I think, trapped McConnell in the first half up top, so he had three steals.
It was Hartenstein Caruso, I believe. They trapped him in that corner. Are you
That
talking
was
about
the
that
second
corner
half, but
trap?
I think
Oh,
maybe,
yeah.
oh no, Cason's wasn't a trap. I think it was just Cason guarding McConnell one-on-one, and he took it
Yeah.
from him. And then Chet, man, the defensive performance from Chet was incredible. And there's so much talk about his offense, and he was much better on offense this game. 18 points on 8 shots, great. But like 5 blocks, switching on guys, like that, he was a big part of how they stopped McConnell. Is when TJ would get, off a screen, Chet would switch onto him, and all of a sudden TJ has nowhere to go. And Chet
Yeah.
blocked him so easily one time. Like, it looks silly when you watch the replay from the baseline and McConnell's trying to do his little jumper that we just talked about, and Chet just puts his hand up and it has no chance. I thought Chet was amazing. And I mean, just this team overall is an all-time great defense, and they're going to be around for a lot longer, which is probably the crazier part.
Well, that's what's scary too about everything because, the Pacers, right? You see Tyrese go down and he's, freaking out, right? With obviously, like, this is abysmal what happened to him. And then even as a Thunder fan, like you have to think to yourself back in what 2012 or whatever year it was when they're in the finals with Westbrook and KD, and they're like, okay, you know, we lost. We lost 5-1 or 4-1, but you know what? We'll be back. And then they don't make it back for 13 years, right? And it's like you have to capitalize on the opportunities that you're given. And I think that's to your point, right? That's why Haliburton and Tatum are reacting the way they're reacting with those injuries, because we talk about it all the time. I mean, a window is very finite in the NBA. And just because the Thunder won it this year doesn't mean that they're going to, you know, come back next year. Like they still have to stay healthy and they have a long season ahead of them for next season. But I mean, if any team is built to be a dynasty, I know this is what we do, right? After every win, you talk dynasty stuff. But I think with them, it's especially pertinent because their best player is 27, their co-star is 22, the rest of the team is like 22 and under and fucking awesome.
And I mean, just going back to Chet, like we again, this was kind of a rough offensive playoff run for him, and it was definitely a rough finals on offense. Like he was really, really inefficient. He like missed shots that you would think he would never miss. And he just looked, you know, a little out of sorts and a little young, but it's like that's part of it where it's like they just won a championship and these guys can get so much better, you know? Like Chet can be one of the best players in the league if he really hits his ceiling. And I know some people like scoff at that, but it's true. Like he has this handle, he has this movement, he has a shot making ability. He just, you know, it didn't come through for him. And he's gotta, you know, develop that and get better at it. Same kind of thing with J-Dub. Like J-Dub was obviously much better than Chet offensively, but he can get so much better. He can get so much better as a shooter, as a driver, as a passer, as a shot maker, like all of it. And you know, SGA, like he might not be able to get a lot better, but I think he learned a lot from this playoff run. Like I think we saw throughout these playoffs how much better he got as a playmaker, and it all kind of came to fruition with this, you know, 12 assist performance where I thought he was absolutely brilliant, like handling double teams, getting downhill and reading the help, you know, spraying out to guys. And so even though, you know, 29 points on 27 shots isn't amazing, those 12 assists and honestly, like a lot of passes where guys just missed shots, he was creating everything for them. And so I think we saw a lot of playmaking growth with Shea, and they can still get better, and it's really scary for the rest of the league.
Well, I mean, not even to mention Kayson Wallace, right? Like Kayson is a huge point, or and fucking Nikola Topic hasn't even played yet. He's already won a championship. I mean, I know that's I'm saying that half joking, but we don't even know what he is. Like he was a high pick last year. He just or 2 years ago, and he's been injured. So there's still guys that can come in and be contributors. And I mean, they just did the hardest thing that there is to do. And this whole all year, I came on this podcast and said I would feel better about taking the Thunder if they had actually made a deep finals run or a playoff run, because you need those bumps and those bruises. Well, brother, they got those bumps and those bruises.
And they still
And now
won,
you have to, yeah, and you have to take them seriously now. And they're a little bit ahead of schedule in terms of if you're looking at NBA teams and what they're usually have to go through to get to the finals and win. They're a little bit ahead of schedule, which is even scarier because they can still get a lot better. And I mean, the West is a gauntlet, though, so we still have to watch out for that, but.
I also want to speak to the depth of this team because obviously the obvious guys are going to get talked about, but like Jay Will, right? They wouldn't beat Denver without Jay Will, probably. And like Isaiah Joe is a really good player. Didn't play really. He didn't play last night at all, and he barely played like throughout the playoffs, sparingly. And then a guy like Kenrich Williams, like played 4 minutes and 37 seconds last night. He was their highest plus minus guy for the series, by the way, which is crazy. But like Kenrich Williams, if he was on Denver, would he be their fifth best player or their sixth best
Genuinely,
player?
yes.
Like seriously, he's an incredibly versatile defender and brings value on offense. Like he's a good decision maker. He can make shots. This team is just like it's a
Usman Dang 6'11" and can dribble, and we don't even know what he
we
is
like
yet. Like he
Dylan
played 1 minute.
Jones and AJ Mitchell. Like
A lot. We made videos about them actually.
no, it's just
So,
such a stupid team. They have
and guess what?
so much.
What if Ace Bailey slips or Derek Queen slips or like whoever, because they have the 15th pick. Like it's very feasible that there's. I mean, I would be very surprised if they took Derek Queen. He just doesn't seem like that type of player for them. But
Yeah,
like,
but
what if? Like what?
what if it's Carter Bryant or like
Yeah,
just
a
some
guy you and I
awesome
have been
defender?
gossiping over text. I guess I can't say that we've been saying it on the pod because we haven't been potting, but Jordan and I have already made a list of guys that we're
Yeah,
very
we
high
love
on,
Carter
Carter
Bryant,
Bryant.
but I mean, whoever, like at this point, let's say they pass on Carter Bryant, they take some guy we've never heard of, we'll probably be like, oh, so he'll be awesome. Like that's what we think of Presti now in
True.
this team because of what they've built, you know, over the years. So, by the way, they traded Josh Giddey straight up for Alex Caruso.
Yeah, but that was a win-win deal, I think. I agree.
Ah, straight up. I don't know.
Giddy's been all Giddy. I mean, he had a good
I like
March, and it's
Giddey.
like,
I do.
I think that was one of those. I don't know. I don't know. I
Caruso's just
didn't.
a ridiculously good player. Like,
Yeah, and he's perfect for what the Thunder are looking to do, I think. Obviously, I don't know why I'm saying I think. Like, I'm a fucking genius on
like he
this
didn't
point.
just win him, help him win
Hot
a championship.
take: Alex Caruso is good at basketball, and helps play winning basketball. I don't think that's like any fleecing by any means, but I think the bigger fleecing is like what they were able to do with SGA and Paul
Oh,
George.
yeah.
And they were, if you think about it, right? They lose in the first round, I believe in a game seven with that Chris Paul team, and then they are bad for 2 years and then they're back. Like, that's the quickest fucking retinker ever. It's ridiculous.
It
And
is.
they were able to do it with Sam Presti just being smarter than everyone else and taking picks, and they still have a bunch of assets and some of the most picks in the league. I mean, they can only get better. All right, let's talk about, I mean, what more than the game? Honestly, I just stopped taking notes in the fourth quarter. I thought I was so like beaten down by the Haliburton. I noted, I think, let's see here, 9:20 in the third quarter. That's when I said that the Pacers started to unravel. They kind of just never really got it together. But up until about the fourth quarter, I think it was like a 12, 14-point game, and Ben Mathis scores to cut it to like 10. And I was like, oh shit, is this gonna be something? And then they just kind of never were able to.
No, I mean, I really thought Shea's playmaking and passing was the story, especially with J-Dub struggling. I mean, just to give quick shout outs to the Pacers, like Siakam is has like gone up my ranking so much throughout these playoffs. And it wasn't an amazing game last night statistically, but he is such an unbelievable defender. Like Nesmith had been struggling with J-Dub throughout the series, and in game six, Carlisle tries Siakam on J-Dub, and instantly J-Dub can't do anything. Like, literally can't do anything. And Siakam guarded J-Dub a lot more last night, and again, struggled in those possessions. And I just want to say, like, Siakam has become one of the most, or maybe not has become, but has been one of the most underrated players in the league. And I hope this, like, put a lot of people on to how good he is, because even me, who, like, follows basketball like crazy, I learned a lot about Siakam and a lot about other guys on the Pacers. Like Aaron Nesmith is an incredible role player that any team would love to have, and I am pissed that the Celtics got rid of him. Like he is so good, a guy that athletic, that good of a shooter, that tough of a defender. Nembhard, is he like the ideal off guard to have next to a number one guy?
Absolutely.
Like he's one of the
Absolutely. Well,
best
what a
point of attack defenders. He might be the best Shea defender in the league. I
Yes.
don't know.
That's what I was going to say. Like, what he was able to do against Shea. Like, I know Shea had, what however many points he had, what was it, 29, right? But those were not an easy 29, which feels stupid to say. But really, like, Nembhard guarded him better than anyone else I've seen. Also, let's talk about Ben Mathurin here. Like, I would kill to have Ben Mathurin on my basketball team. We've been talking about guys whose cards we want to get. I think Ben Mathis should be top of that list as well. Like, that guy is fucking awesome and he cares. And I love that. I love that he's drawing fouls with the 10 seconds left in the finals when he's down, however, down 12 and they're going to lose. And he's sitting there hitting it to the rim and the crowd's booing because they want it to be the finals and, or want it to be over, right? And I just thought everyone was awesome. I will say, Miles Turner, I'm good. I'm good on him. I don't want him. That's something that's
I
just
still
I
like Miles. I mean, he had just the roughest shooting series that you can have, and maybe that's just what happens to, you know, a guy like that when you get that deep in the playoffs. Man, your legs are
How
just
about
no longer with you, but
easier said than done, but how about like, trying to just initiate anything or try to like take shots even, like he just was mentally out of it, I think.
yeah, I don't know.
Which is understandable. Your best player went down and tore his Achilles right in front of you. I get it. But
Yeah,
it's,
did you see Toppin talk about that after? Like he was literally
absolutely.
like, "Yeah, I played bad. I was thinking about the Hallie injury the whole time." And he said he felt like it was his fault. I don't know exactly what that was about. Maybe
Yeah,
I
I don't know
like on
either.
the actual play. I don't know. But
Well,
yeah,
the other thing I was
that's
confused about.
definitely a mental fuck up
Oh, sure.
fuckery.
100%. And the other thing I was confused about was why Siakam was out for so long. He played 38 minutes, I believe. Like, why is he not playing
Yeah, he played 36:55, and there was a stretch in the third where he sat for
Yeah.
five straight, I think. He only played 6:43 in the third, so it's not egregious by any means, but it did feel in that moment we were texting about it, like the McConnell, ISO ball, like the hey, TJ, you need to do everything on offense. It kind of seemed like that was starting to wither away and the magic had
Yeah.
faded and the Thunder had started to figure it out a little bit. And we were kind of like, why is Siakam still on the bench? And Nembhard was on the bench at that time. And it was, I think it was almost a lineup of all subs in the game for a stretch. And that's where the game actually kind of got away from them. But I mean, look. I will never question anything Rick Carlisle does. I think that guy is an
No.
absolute genius. Again, a guy that, like, for somebody who has just, like, really dove into basketball, like, I wasn't watching Rick Carlisle coach the 2011 finals the same way I was watching this game. And now I see, like, he is literally one of the best coaches, maybe the best coach that I've ever seen, like studied closely like this. He is an absolute genius. So the Pacers. I know it's hard to be like, hey, they'll be back. I don't know if they'll be back, but they do have a very bright future and they have a lot of positives to take away from this, even though it doesn't feel like it right now.
And I mean, well, first off, with Carlisle, I think part of it was like he kind of runs out of not favor, like it just felt like his time ran out in Dallas with that Luka Brunson KP team and those other Luka and Brunson teams. It just felt like kind of ran its course, and almost like he just kind of lost his voice in the locker room there. But that team was still extremely well coached, right? And you know, he gets fired, and you almost people, you know, obviously blame the coach first. And it just felt strange that it's like we know Rick Carlisle is good, like we know this. I it's
Yeah,
weird
what an
that
awful mistake by Dallas. Like, honestly, and we
yeah,
like Jay
because then
Kidd,
he
like, but
and I
Carlisle is
mean
literally as good as it gets in the NBA. And Mark Dagnall was asked about what it's like to coach against him, and he was like, "It's humbling." And
yeah
I thought, like, as good of a coach as Dagnall is, and he's won coach of the year, I thought
yeah
he got comfortably outcoached by Carlisle this series, like in
absolutely.
almost every scenario. And Carlisle
Yeah.
just has. Adjustment after adjustment. He can do it in the moment. He comes back after games and changes things. He'll change things after timeouts, then he'll change them back. Like, the dude is an absolute psychopath and a genius. And I, like, my mind was blown by some of the stuff he did.
Well, even tonight, you lose your fucking biggest person that you've been game planning with,
Yeah.
and then he just adapts and
And
improvises.
hey, TJ, let's go 1-4 low. You got it. And
Yeah.
then just a quick thing that Carlisle did that I thought was cool was they started blitzing McConnell. They got a steal on him one time. I think they might have knocked it out of bounds another time. And you could see that, like, well, now that I watch it back, I see that, like, Bradley was rolling, but you don't really want Bradley on the
Yeah, you
roll.
don't want it to.
And immediately after the blitz, after that sequence, Carlisle subs in Thomas Bryant. And I'm like, what the fuck are we doing
Yes.
with Thomas Bryant right now?
Immediate
Immediately
air ball
pick and
three.
pop, wide open three. Like, because they blitz, the pop is wide open for a good shooter in Thomas Bryant. Granted, he hasn't
Missed
played, but
it.
Carlisle's reaching for stuff and trying to find something, and you get your team a wide open shot. Like, he knows basketball at such an insane level, and he just makes some of the greatest decisions. Like, he is incredible. So yeah, that was
Yeah.
my Carlisle
That
nerd moment.
was awesome. And yeah, it was like, why is Thomas Bryant in the game? And then immediately off the bench three, tough
Wide
look,
open.
but wide open. Yeah, basically what he did last night was he was in the middle of a fucking sick guitar solo at a concert, and then the guitar just caught on fire and he threw it away and grabbed a trumpet and finished off the fucking solo. He lost. He still lost. He lost the crowd. They didn't love it, but he kept it alive. So let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about the implications of the Thunder winning. Okay. Coming back, let's get into. I feel like you feel like we covered the game sufficiently. I feel like we did.
Yes, we did.
Okay. Let's get into, I guess, kind of the implications of this now. I feel like we covered the Thunder well enough. I want to talk about the East. I don't think I gave it enough time before I texted. I gave it about 2 solid minutes before I said, I was like, this is really sad. This is sickening. Magic to win the East at +600 question mark. I like seriously though, what are we thinking in terms of what does the East look like now that Tyrese Haliburton's out, presumably for the rest of next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously there are still going to be moves that get made that we don't know about. But I think Cleveland is a clear favorite for me. Then I think Cleveland's in a tier of their own. And then I would go probably New York and New York and Orlando, I was going to say, but I feel like New York is still clear of Orlando for me because of the top end talent. We still need, Paolo and Franz to develop a bit more before we start putting them in those talks. We also haven't even seen Bane on the team yet, even though we all think it's going to be awesome. But like beyond that, it's going to get weird, right? Like Milwaukee, Boston, Indiana, all without really key players. The Pistons are gonna, they're gonna be fighting for like a top four seed. The Hawks could have a good year. It's gonna get weird. And then
Bucks.
like the what?
Well, to me, like I think the Bucks are good. I think the Bucks are actually going to do something. Like they
I
have
mean, no
Giannis.
Dame. I don't know. I guess so. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, no Dame. I don't know.
Philly.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Is Embiid playing? Are we sure of this? I don't
No, we're
know.
not sure at all, but that like what is it going to be? 4 through, 10 is going to be so weird. We have no idea. And the other thing I saw was like the East is going to be pulling some all-time all-stars out of the hat next year,
Yes.
like Jakob Poeltl all-star, like
Well,
something
he better be
crazy.
all-star because Toronto was refusing to give him up in a KD trade. So
Yeah.
I guess his all-star season is impending. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like I think to me, I think Cleveland and the Knicks are on the same tier. And I'm going to move them off when Cleveland actually wins a playoff series,
Yeah,
right?
I still would have Cleveland a tier above. I mean, they got some really untimely injuries. Garland was clearly hurt. Mobley was not himself in that second round series. Obviously, they did not play well, and I do think like there were some flaws exposed with the two small guards, and Jared Allen really did not have a good playoffs. But I also think maybe they make a pretty drastic move and get better. And even if they don't get better, they just won 64 games and.
Yeah, why would you have to make the drastic move now, right? It's like you just bought yourself a season, basically, with
Yeah,
what happened.
you don't have to. I'm just saying they might, and it might,
Yeah.
there if there's a good Darius Garland deal out there, like I'm sure they're exploring it and thinking about it, right? Same thing with Jared Allen. Like teams want guys like Jared Allen, but maybe it's, Mobley at the five time. Maybe we don't want to play this too big look anymore. So I don't know. We'll
Which, for
see.
the record, we like Mobley at the five. We do like.
Oh yeah. I think Mobley can absolutely would be awesome at the five full time.
I agree, and I think, well, I you're right in what you're saying. I need to see it in the playoffs first, and I just think that's a different animal. If it's like, okay, my guys didn't show up the year before, this year they're injured. The year before there was, some other weirdness. It's like maybe that's just what happens to you.
Yeah.
That's not the most analytical thing, but with the playoffs, right? Like, it's the team who is the healthiest. And the team that has gone through the most wars usually that makes the longest run, right? So to me, it's like the Knicks have shown that they're able to stay relatively healthy at times and are able to go and kind of push teams to their limits, right? And to me, it's them in Cleveland and then kind of everything the rest. Like I think I would have Milwaukee up there. I just think if you have Giannis, like you're going to be really solid in the East. That's just kind of what it boils down to. Is if Giannis is healthy and having the type of season that he's been having. They're gonna win games. Like that's just going to happen with how poor the East is. And then it's Detroit and Orlando, and then everyone else, it's like injured or questions or hasn't done it yet. I think those are the three tiers everything's left. It's like, Toronto hasn't done it yet. Pacers, Celtics injured. Atlanta hasn't done it yet. Charlotte hasn't done it yet. Questions. It's like Philly, like what's going on there? Atlanta's a team for me to keep an eye on because they've got like a bunch of like really solid role player guys that they could kind of condense and make a move and try and get frisky and try and get a little weird, right? So I think like Atlanta's definitely a team to keep an eye on. But other than that, I mean, there's gonna also be some hilarious tanking coming out of the East. It's gonna be an all-time tank sesh.
Yes, I totally agree with Atlanta. Like, there's a scenario where they're a top three seed, seriously, which, like, you get another great, well, a full great season of Jalen Johnson. You get Trey, maybe being
Ricochet.
even a little bit better than he was. Reese Shea developing, Dyson still developing. Like, that's a fun team that we
Terrence
liked all
Mann, we
year.
like.
Yeah, we like a lot of their guys. I mean, they're deep. They have defenders to surround Trey. We like Onyeka.
Yeah. If they moved
That could
off of
be a good
Clint,
team,
I'd
man.
like that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't. It's gonna get weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like Larry Nance is a guy that, like, why not shop him? He's a guy that's going to have value on the market.
He's also a
Maybe
good
like what.
player. I don't like why not keep him?
Absolutely. Well, the reason I would say to Schaub is like because you kind of have like an overabundance of riches almost at like that kind of. He's not a wing, but if you were to shop a wing plus Larry plus like picks or something, like there's something there,
Make an
right? Like,
upgrade, yeah.
the other aspect of this is the free agent class is just pretty bad, and well, it's bad because a lot of people are going to opt into their player options because no teams have money, like no teams have cap space that are like actually good. Like Julius Randle, for example, we joked about him opting in because it's like $30 million, and at the time when he was traded from the Knicks, he was not playing well, and we were always joking like, yeah, I think he's gonna opt into that. But now it's like he actually probably could have tested the open free agency market and gotten a bigger paycheck than that, but no one has money, so he definitely will opt in now. And I know that's on the West there, but still, like if you're a free agent, like the free agent class isn't great, so they're gonna have to be some trades to be made if you're the East and you're trying to be a team that, like an Atlanta, maybe even like a Detroit, who feels like they're maybe like a piece away from being a contender coming out of the East. Like they could get frisky and make something weird happen. They have the Tobias Harris contract. You're probably gonna lose fucking what's his face, the guard there that was shooting shit out of the ball. He's probably gonna get a bag somewhere. And yeah, like these teams, like it's an open field in the East, and I'm excited. Anything else on the East, or do you want to move on?
No, I'm good. Let's move on.
Okay. Do you want to talk Rockets and Suns trade?
Yes, let's.
Let's. Okay. So the trade itself, just to kind of run it down, Rockets get Kevin Durant. The Suns get Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, pick number 10, and 5 seconds. Jordan, what was your first thought when you saw that Shams tweet go through?
First thought was I really liked it for both sides, and I think that's still kind of the thought. Obviously, the Rockets come out looking like major winners because it's a really small package for a guy that makes them real contenders and fills the biggest need on their roster. And so, like, yes, I think this is an A plus for the Rockets. I think you do this 10 times out of 10. I do think they are potentially the second best team in the West next year. I mean, depending on what happens here with Denver, and some of the other offseason moves with these teams. But, like, on paper right now, I think them getting to the Western Conference Finals feels like I would bet yes rather than no if you gave me even odds. So
Absolutely.
I think obviously they hit it out the park, but I see everybody really like shitting on the Suns for this, and
I don't get that either.
it just seems like there wasn't a big enough market for KD. We heard the Minnesota offer, which was it was like Gobert and a pick and one of Terrence Shannon or Dillingham, and then KD said he didn't want to go to the Timberwolves. So you would think
Yeah.
like, okay, well then we're not gonna make that good of an offer. There was a Miami offer that got leaked or reported that was just absolutely laughable.
Yeah.
I don't have it pulled up, but I think it was like Jovic, the 20th
No,
pick.
Jovic wasn't allowed in it. It was like they were like cutting their what's it called? They were like, yeah, we're drawing the line at Jovic and Hawkez and fucking like Pelle Larsen. And it was like, what even like is this, right? I'm trying to pull up the fucking trade here because it was a joke. I mean,
Yeah, well, the point is, this was a decent return. And I know a lot of people hate Jalen Green too. I'm more optimistic on Jalen Green. Like, he's 22 years old, 23 years old. And I know the shooting numbers aren't great. The efficiency's not great. You might not like the shot selection or the decision making at times. He's not an elite defender, but he is a freak athlete. He's 6'5. He's long. He is, at when his shot goes down, looks absolutely unstoppable. And he's a guy with a ton of potential that. In this, trade market for KD, in this scenario, you want to get somebody back who has some sort of upside. They also get a good role player in Dylan Brooks, and they get pick 10 and 5 second rounders. Like, I think that's a completely fair haul for what they were looking at in this situation. Now, are the Suns going to be really good? No, but I just wanted to get that out of the way because I thought it was a good deal for both sides. But let's talk Rockets because, I mean, that's the
Yeah,
fun part of this.
I agree with everything you said. I also thought it was a really good deal for both sides. I actually thought like they got, like you said, like who are the Rockets going against? Like who are they betting against? They can just keep lowering their offer.
Yeah.
Eventually, you have to bite. I mean, the Suns were kind of powerless. KD wanted to go there. He vetoed the other places. The other place that he wanted to go to, which was Miami, didn't offer him anything good.
Yeah, and
He's
why
on
would
an
they? Like, what
expiring.
is Miami going to give up their whole future for KD for? Like, yeah,
Yeah,
maybe they
exactly.
would trade you, pennies on the dollar for him, just to sell tickets, but they're not going to win anything with them. So it doesn't make sense for them to offer something crazy.
So what you get in terms of Jalen Green, who, like we said, good young, I don't,
I mean,
people will call him a
people don't think
star.
he's good. Like, people think he's a
He
straight
is
up
good.
bust. He's never going to be anything. So if you
Which
think
is
that, then
what
yeah, you're not going to like the steal.
would you, if you think that, you're also wrong. Like, you don't, you're not watching. Like, I get that he is inefficient, like you said, and I get that there are ups and there are downs, but this guy is a good player. Like, he's a good basketball player. Maybe he doesn't fit on the Suns team, and if I'm the Suns, I'm probably looking to reroute him. But more importantly, I'm probably looking to fucking move off of Devin Booker. Like, I don't get why we're keeping him on the team now, especially at his age. Let's move on from him and start this rebuild here. You've clearly made a mistake. That doesn't even mean you have to build around Jalen Green, but you should probably look to move him and reset this team, because I know we're going to start with the Rockets, but I think we should start with the Suns here just to get out of the way, because it's eat your vegetables first. Like, this lineup here is what I think their starting lineup is going to be, is like Jalen Green, Devin Booker, Dylan Brooks, Osso Igodoro, and Nick Richards. You don't have a center. Like, maybe you start Bol Bol. Maybe you start Mason Plumlee.
I'd probably start Royce O'Neal or Ryan Dunn over Oso, but either way,
Yeah.
it's not a great lineup.
Either way, I mean, Royce O'Neal's 6'6" and Ryan Dunn's like 6'5". So either way, like, it's still a small team. You need to figure out, like, they need a center. Nick Richards is not very, I think he's like 6'11", but still, like, he's not like a good starting center in the league,
Yeah.
right? This is a bad team. And then off the bench, you have Colin Gillespie, Ryan Dunn, Bradley Beal, Cody Martin, Royce O'Neal, Mason Plumlee, Bol Bol, Tyus Jones. This is a bad team. This is not going to be a good team. And they don't make sense. They don't fit together well. Like, you're going to have to reroute some things, and you just need bodies on this team. So getting the number 10 pick is good. Like, that's going to be someone that can come in this draft, actually be meaningful. Like, if Malawak is still there at 10, I don't think he
That'd
will
be
be, but
great.
that'd be fucking awesome for you. So, like, there's stuff they can do here. And then the 5 seconds, like, we've seen second round picks hit at an alarming rate recently for the NBA player, or for the NBA draft. So there are guys they can bring in here. It's just, to me, it's like you could be a very bad team very quickly if you got rid of Devin Booker and brought in some other stuff to retinker. Maybe let Jalen
Yeah, I mean,
Green,
the problem is
sell
they
some
don't have their
jerseys.
picks, and that's the
Yeah.
other thing that people were
Or
mad
go
about
get
is.
some picks with Devin Booker, right?
Yeah, I know, but like tanking doesn't really make sense when you don't have your own pick, but I know what you mean.
True.
Just
Yeah.
reset it all.
Reset everything and kind of figure it out. So, I mean, who it's the Nets own most of their picks, right? Well, what if you call them and offer them Devin Booker, and then they maybe, like, become a meeting place for some of the stars again? And, like, I don't know. I don't get not shopping him, because what do you think this team is going to be other than bad?
At best, they're in the play-in, probably.
Yeah. So weird. All right, let's go to the fun part. Let's go to the Rockets here. You and I were texting each other just different lineups, just having fun with it. I think my favorite one was, like, some semblance of, like, Amen, Tari, KD, Jabari, and, like, Sengun or something. Like, I don't know, some weird mix of just length and versatility and no initiation, but it's a lot of fun. I don't know. Just, this team is so deep now. They already were so deep, but we watched a ton of Rockets basketball, right? And the biggest thing for them was they just couldn't score at the end of the game. And that just gets better now with KD.
They have a ton of versatility. They have a ton of youth, a ton of athleticism, a bunch of different lineups they can go to, and now they finally have that number one option. And I think a lot of people are getting it twisted with KD. He was incredible this last year. Like, he was
He was awesome.
a top 15 NBA player in the league last year. And yeah, the team was terrible, so they didn't win. And so a lot of people are like, well, KD's washed up. He's 37. He's this. He's that. He was the anchor of their defense and their either first or second best player on every night. This season he was their best player because Booker was pretty rough for a stretch there. I think it's going to be great for him to kind of be in a little bit of a scaled down defensive role now after, like I said, being an anchor for a defensive team at age 36, 37, whatever he was. And now it's going to be like he's in heaven. Like, there's going to be so many holes that get plugged up. There's going to be so many, recoveries that he's gonna be like, wait, where did Amen just block that from the 3-point
Yeah,
line? Like,
Tari just ran from there to there.
oh, we just
What?
stole it 4 times in a row. I didn't even have to move. Like,
Yeah,
it's
that's
gonna
crazy.
be it's gonna be a nice change of scenery for Durant, and then he's gonna be able to do what he does on offense. He's exactly what they need. I'm really excited to see them. It'll be, an interesting fit, obviously, with Şengün, what happens with Şengün is, Fred still gonna handle the ball this much, but I think it's a like smash out of the park move.
I love that you brought up the defensive side of things. Like, that's exactly where I was going to go with it. He was guarding the number one best player on the other team's offense every night, was the anchor of their defense. It was him and Ryan Dunn were literally the two. And I didn't, admittedly, like, I watched for KD, and towards the end of the series, like, you and I would watch them and be like, this isn't even fun to watch. Like, this team just sucks, like, so bad, and it's just not enjoyable.
It wasn't fun to
But
watch after like a month or like a
yeah.
month and a half.
Absolutely. But when we were watching, like, he was fucking awesome. What he did every night was incredible, just offensively. And then, like you said, the idea that he can just kind of take a back seat defensively and just be able to focus on what he does best offensively is so good, and it's going to be so useful to this team. And then also just the fact that the addition of subtract by subtraction with Jalen Green, right? Where there was a lot of times where it was just like you'd be watching the Rockets and you would see. You would say to yourself, okay, it's the Jalen Green is going to take a couple shots here now because he felt like he hasn't been in the offense. So he's just going to go and out of the flow, kind of do his own thing for a little bit. That you just get rid of that. And you would feel that on like a much smaller scale with Dylan Brooks, where Dylan Brooks would be like, wait a minute, I haven't shot any threes tonight. Might as well go hit a couple or go
I
put some
thought
up,
Brooks
right?
was incredible this past season. I thought he
He
was
was.
like a
And
top tier role player.
we watched him in front of our face just fucking ignite the Celtics on fire. But there, you have to admit, right? There are times where it's just like, I haven't really got any shots up
Well,
right now.
that's
I'd
the
love to
other
get
thing
some
with
up.
that team last year is nobody could score. And so, yeah, sometimes guys are like, all right, I guess I should try, like, because nobody else can.
What I'm saying is the person that does this now is Kevin fucking Durant, one of
Yeah.
the best shot makers of all time, right? So
Yes.
it's like, all right, yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that trade.
Right. I think the other interesting part is there's a lot of talk about the young guys, Cam Whitmore and Reed Sheppard, last year really getting pushed out of the lineup because of how deep Houston was. And I know Houston fans are really excited to see those guys get some more run. I hope they get more run. I'm not totally sold that they will.
Yeah,
Like,
I don't know
there's
about that.
still so much depth on this team. Aaron Holiday's a really good player. Jayshon Tate's a really good
Dejounte
player.
Tate.
I haven't looked into totally like who's coming back or what the contract situations are.
I
But
think
either way, like, it'll be interesting to see. Like, do you think Reed Sheppard and Cam Whitmore are a real part of this team? I think in the regular season, at least, we will see a lot more of them. I mean, Reed Sheppard literally, like, Ime wouldn't allow him to play, and he was the, what, number three pick?
Yeah, I don't see. Like Reed, I don't see getting more minutes, unfortunately. Like more consistent minutes. I just think it's how Ime's wired. Like he's such a defensive minded coach, right? That I just don't think Reed has the body. Like he's never gonna be a plus defender.
Yeah.
Or he's probably never gonna be like a net neutral defender. That's all you can at most hope for. But I don't think he's gonna get there. And I just don't know if he's gonna see the floor, especially because Aaron Holiday and Jayshon Tate can be that. And Cam Whitmore to an extent can be that. Whitmore made less sense to me as to why he wasn't playing as much. It was more so just like bodies and all that. But you know, they needed guys that could score, and he just wouldn't be put in the game. I almost wonder if it's like an attitude thing with Ime, and him, because we've seen that happen before. And that's why Whitmore dropped coming out of Villanova, in the draft, was sort of like an attitude thing. I really was hoping they would go to Phoenix, those two. I was really, really wanting that to happen because those are two guys that would just flourish in Phoenix and would
Yeah.
be. Like they would get so much run, they would be really helpful for that team. I was kind of bummed out to see that they didn't go. Maybe it's a move. Like I don't even know what moves they can make. Like they just have. Like I don't really know what else you would really want to upgrade at this point. If you're Houston, so like what would you do with those two guys? Because I just want to see them on other teams. Because the long answer to your question is I just don't think they're going to get that much more play. Cam, but if I had to pick one over the other, I would think Cam would get more play than Reed.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It'll be interesting either way. I am just really excited to watch this team, have some competent offense at least. I don't think they're going to be some sort of elite offense now, but I do think so many of their games they were like dominating for 3.5 quarters, and then the
Yeah, just
other team in the last 4 minutes tightened up the screws on defense, and all of a sudden the Rockets went 0 for 5 or 0 for 6 in their last 6 shots. So that shouldn't happen anymore. I'm also really happy they kept Jabari, because that was a big talking point of like his name getting thrown around in the trade talks. And I was almost like, I wouldn't do it. I'm that high on Jabari where it's like, do we really want to trade this super young, super talented wing for Kevin Durant when he's 37 and, it'll give us a 2-year window or whatever? Obviously, maybe a lot of people would have still done that trade, but I think it's huge that they got to keep him. Brooks, it is a hit. I think, like I said, Brooks was an awesome player. He's an elite defender and he had some really good, games of shot making. He's got that weird little turnaround jumper that looks ugly as hell, but bails him out of possession sometimes. And, I think they're going to feel that a little bit, but overall, this team is loaded and they're going to be incredible. I hope Amen continues to develop like I think he will, because if he just develops a tiny bit of an
A
offensive
jumper.
game and a mid-range jumper and, a little bit more off the dribble stuff, I mean, the sky's the limit for this team. It's going to be incredible.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. Okay, that kind of wraps up the trades here. Before we go, Celtics draft. So we're gonna be doing an episode. We're gonna try and potentially live stream it. If you don't see it on YouTube, then it'll be out the next day. So it's either gonna be Wednesday or Thursday where we're gonna be doing a draft show, just kind of recapping. You and I have kind of pretty much deep dove the draft now. Definitely more than when we were talking with Ben, and had him on. And we've been texting a lot of players. It's a lot of those just texting the person's name and then getting each other feeling each other out.
I think at least the first round, we at least have a feel for who the players are and what like we're not, grinding tape, but we at least know who guys are and what their styles are, where they could fit, what teams would need them, stuff like that.
Absolutely. So Celtics have the 28th pick and the 32nd pick. Is there anyone that you're kind of eyeing with those picks?
Well, we were talking about a little bit, off camera, and I think like there's gonna be some guys who slip to the early 20s, late teens, and I'm really hoping the Celtics move up, because in the back of the first round, like obviously there still can be guys to slip, but if they move up and they can get, Rashear Fleming at 20, 22, our guy Ben Pfeiffer obviously grinds a lot more tape than both of us combined. He had Fleming at 27 on his board. I think that's a little lower than most people have him, but I like that guy a lot. I think he's at least going to be around the league for a long time, and he's going to get chances wherever he goes because of the size and the movement at that size. And if the shot's real, like that is a real player. So there just seems to be a lot of good defenders in this draft and good wings. Colin Murray-Boyles is a guy who's getting a lot of talk, and people absolutely love him. He's getting like Draymond comps. But he's 6'7" and he's a big man, and there's a chance he slides. That's another guy like you were talking about. If the Celtics trade Sam Hauser and both their picks, could they move up to 18 and get lucky with a guy sliding to them there? I don't know if Murray Boyles falls that far, but I'm just saying, I hope the Celts move up, and I haven't totally thought about, who I want them to take, but there is going to be value there.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what you said there with in terms of, being able to move up here. I think they have mentioned that that Brad has been active and like looking to move up from what I've been seeing on like Twitter and things of that nature. So I do hope that he actually like commits to it, because I really want him to actually move up and get someone impactful, because this draft, like, I feel like a lot of people aren't talking about it as much as like past drafts, but this is going to be a very deep draft. Like there are people that are going to be really good role players. Like there's people that are going to play now. This is a little bit of an older draft. There are guys that are staying in college longer because of NIL. They're getting more experience. They're more used to different situations, right? Like if you're moving around constantly, you're having to learn new playbooks from different teams. You're having to learn how to mingle and mesh into new environments because of NIL deals, right? You got guys going from, D3 to D1 to JUCO to D1, all types of different things, transferring within D1 a bunch, coming out as older players. They've been through a lot. They've seen a lot. They're more able to be plug and play guys in the NBA as role players. So there's a lot of guys that the Celtics could grab here, especially with what they might be in the future in terms of they need to save money long term. So they need to get guys that are going to be playable. This year, too, like this year, this is going to be an open year. Like there are going to be young guys that are going to be on the scene that'll get some play. What were we going to say?
There was, I mean, a more realistic option other than the other two guys I mentioned, because they're probably going to go before the Celtics. Ryan Kalkbrenner is a gigantic human being.
Yeah, that's
He's
what
an
I was gonna say.
older guy in the draft, but obviously, we don't know what's going on with KP. Horford's aging. Would be great to get a big man in there, and Kalkbrenner's probably a good name to look for if they don't, package the picks and move up.
I want Maxime. So my guys, we were started this with like who they I want them to get. It's for me, it's Maxime Reynaud or Ryan Kalkbrenner are the two. Reynaud shot 34.5% from three. Kalkbrenner shot 34.4% from three. Reynaud averaged like 11-ish rebounds per game and 20 points per game coming out of Stanford. And then Kalkbrenner was at 19.2 points per game and 8.7 rebounds per game. Both guys are like, we talk about KP's versatility and kind of like who's going to fill in for Horford and KP when they're gone. Those are two guys, excuse me, that could potentially step into that position there and be like something, right? And then in terms of like with the 32nd pick, those are the guys I'm kind of eyeing at 28. For the 32nd pick, I really just, if Tyrese Proctor is like there or you can get him later. I just like Tyrese Proctor, having watched a lot of Duke this year. 6'6" point guard kind of thing. Almost is a little like this is blasphemy, but a little Drew Holiday-ish potentially. I see like a bare bones of that. I feel I see him as like a high utility player, someone that just kind of never panned out to be what we expected. And maybe at 32, you kind of take a risk here. But there are other good guys on the board, and 32 is a good pick to have. So either they move up and make a little bit of a splash and get something good. Like if Danny Wolf out of Michigan drops, like that's very interesting because that's a guy that comes with like dribbling wise. I've never seen a guy that size do kind of those dribble moves. I mean, other than like KD,
I
because
mean,
KD's technically
he's
7 feet.
not, yeah, he's bigger than KD. Danny Wolf is going to be one of the crazier. Like, people have him mid lottery and then people have him second round. It's insane. So
If he
I
drops,
like
like I'm
him.
willing to take him. I like him too. I'm a little worried. Like for the Celtics, I want like a defensive anchor kind of guy that can step out and hit some threes. That feels to be more so what the other two guys I said were, more so than Danny Wolfe. But yeah, there's just a lot of skilled guys coming down here. So I'm very excited for the draft. All right, anything else before we go? Or I think we covered everything we want to talk about.
We're good.
Yeah, I mean, we love the Bane trade. I don't know if we said that on here. We loved that.
True. Loved it.
Thought it
They're
was
my favorite.
great. Thought it was a good, I thought it was a good trade both ways too. Like if
Yeah,
you look at how the
people are saying it's way too many picks. Like, guys,
look
that's
at what those
what
picks are.
there's one like really good pick potentially, but I don't know.
Yeah,
Whatever.
I
I
agree.
already talked about it on TikTok.
Yeah, so I agree. I thought it was a good win-win. I think you see five first and you're like, whoa, and then you actually look at what the first are and it's like, eh, they're coming from us. We expect to be good. They're nice. I'm not gonna use these. So yeah, love the trade there. All right, let's wrap it up here. Thank you all for listening. This will be out on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're watching on YouTube, please like, leave a comment, and subscribe. It helps us out very much. If you're on Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, Amazon, wherever you're listening to this, please give us a 5-star review. It helps us so much. Share us with your friends. For Jordan and I, we will be back this week, whether that's Wednesday or Thursday, covering some of the draft recap, talking about any trades or anything like that. But yeah, thank you all for listening. We will be back later and peace.